Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you. Introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode. So click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by B21, a platform which helps you start your journey with cryptocurrencies. Visit b21.io/hustleshare and get $2 upon signing up. Also powered by Podmetrics, the only analytics platform you'll ever need for your podcast. Sign up now at podmetrics.co for free and use the code HustleShare.
And you could look at the cup like half empty and say the Philippines is a very sad market, or you could look at it from the perspective that we see it, where the cup is very half full and the upside is massive.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share podcast. We have made another leap because today we'll be having one of the newest, if not the newest, venture builder or venture fund out there that's out to shock and rock the whole startup community. Because recently, actually just last week, they announced that there is another venture builder in town, and they're not just formed by random people. These are amazing startup founders. So I made sure we get first dibs to put the word out so that you can get first dibs as a hustler listening to Hustle Share to get on the shows. But before I get carried away, let's welcome to the show one of the partners in Buco Ventures, Mr. George Patton. George, welcome to the show.
Iron.
Woo. There you go, George. There you go. I got intense because I'm very excited to have you guys on the show, and welcome, because I've had some of your colleagues in this one. Like, you know, this is a superstar team you have here with, you know, your partner Saul Moya of Flower Store, Andrew Koger of goodwork.ph. And by the way, if you want to listen to them, we're not going to dissect it in this episode. Scroll all the way back. They're right there. If you want to dissect what this is, that's what it is. But again, George, I'm a big fan of what you guys do, and welcome to Hustle Share.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ron, for actually inviting us here to talk about Buco Ventures. And also just a little bit of a correction. We're not a venture builder. We're more of a venture fund focused in really like the angel fund, like the earliest stages of a startup.
Got it. Since you already delved into it, what is a venture fund really by definition? And what do you typically do?
So basically, the venture fund that we've made together is like we're really like five partners, right? It's Carlos, COO of Lazada and EVP of the Lazada Group. And we have Saul, who heads Flower Store, the biggest flowers and gifting company in Southeast Asia. And we have Goodwork, which is the biggest beauty like services app in the Philippines. And then we have Angel, who heads Lads Mall. And then me, who has Abstract Digital, building like MVPs for like Rocket Internet back startups in Southeast Asia. So we are really coming in here as like a very experienced group of founders, and then pulling in our capital to really just build a venture fund for founders, built by founders. So we come in at the earliest stages, like pre-launch, pre-revenue.
Got it. All right. That you already gave us a good glimpse of what that is. And thank you for describing it properly. But I need to also ask you the million-dollar question. George, what's your hustle?
So my day job, my full-time job is I'm the co-founder of Abstract Digital. And now I'm the founding investor as well in Buko Ventures. But in Abstract Digital, we've been in the agency business for close to a decade now. And in the last couple of years, we've niched our way into working with venture-backed startups in Southeast Asia. So yeah, we built a lot of startups for Rocket Internet, for 500 startups, plug and play. And yeah, it's exciting to have this kind of global perspective. So when I was talking about this with the superstar team of Buko, we really just came in and said, hey, you know what? Let's really just purely focus on like Filipino founders and put that's our amazing. Money where our mouth is.
And that's true. And just I'm just at awe with the people that you just dropped right now. 500, plug and play, you know, Rocket. For them to trust you. And again, you're not in Manila, by the way. Just goes to show the type of talent we have spread out. Because people always think, maybe it's just Manila devs that we need to talk to. Dude, Cebu is where it's at. You know, and in building stuff, like, you know, knowing what I know and the top secret stuff, like, you know, the Cebu people are working on, dude, it's not even close. You guys build the best tech out there. But before I get carried away, before you tell us how you got that done, I need you to buckle up, my man, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. There you go. We just passed by Ilaputi, right there. I miss Ilaputi. I miss IT.
The owner is a good friend of mine.
Yes. Shout out to you, John. You have the best beef stroganoff in the world. So if you always go, if you go to Cebu, before they were in IT Park, now I don't know what that place is called, but they have a better, a bigger place. You need to go and eat the beef stroganoff in Ilaputi before you go Casa Verde. Just take it from a fat man like me. And go sunburst for merienda as well. There you go. So we're all the way back. And the Padins are very well respected in the tech industry. I've met your brother a long time ago in who's Albert? So shout out to Albert. I've met him through a startup pitching competition when the startup ecosystem was literally forming. And that's last name recall already. The OGs know them. But this is my first time actually getting to know you in a deep, deep, deep level. But walk us through how you got into the world of business. Because again, if your brother is also in tech and you are in tech, was this ingrained with you at a young age that business is the way to go? What were your early influences towards entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think I have a very good story just around like our childhood. Like I would pretty much like to say that we had a very unique childhood. Like Albert is, like I told you, my brother since birth.
Again, I was totally befuddled. Like, how can you have a brother since birth?
Yeah, we're five in the family, five siblings. So our childhood is pretty unique because our father is a very smart engineer and also very entrepreneurial. And you know, when you're entrepreneurial and pre-internet age, you just really follow the opportunity wherever it is. Right. So that actually meant as a kid, we moved more than 40 times, like 40.
40 houses. Times.
Yeah. And so what that actually really means is like just by the time you have like friends in a certain village, you have to leave them and never see them again, you know? And as a kid, that shapes you up to really just become very, very adaptable. And in entrepreneurship, you have to be like freaking adaptable, right? Because it's like the situations just change all the time. So yeah, it's like as a family, you just had that kind of adaptability where we just take everything, ride the boat, go to another island. And, you know, the Philippines is like Luzon, besides Mindanao, and we have like different languages. So I'm pretty fluent in Tagalog as well. When I go to Manila, which pre-pandemic, I'm always there, I really just speak Tagalog as if I'm a local. And when I'm here, I'm like super Bisaya. So that was the kind of childhood that we had that I think had a lot of relevance when it came to entrepreneurship.
Got it. Now, talk about school. Because again, if you're adaptable, you form friends, you leave them, you can't invest too much on friends and have that sentimental bond and then all of a sudden just move around. Technically, you're like a family of an NBA superstar that gets traded around from city to city, right? You have a school here and all of a sudden you next year you're in the next city, try to put your roots and then you gotta move again. Walk us through how you also grew up from that
forward. It's like always moving school. It's like we are in this school this year and the next year we're in another school in another island with another language and you're like a Tagalog and then you're like in a school where students speak Bisaya. So that's the kind of childhood that we had. And yeah, it was something eventually that we got very used to. And also my dad was very entrepreneurial. And you know, when entrepreneurship, it's like a roller coaster ride, right?
Yeah.
When it's up, it's up. When it's down, it's really down. So, you know, we had childhood where we had to do promissory notes. It's like we didn't have money for tuition fee. But, you know, that was the kind of really the childhood that we had. But it was beautiful, especially in retrospect. Yeah.
You were aware of risks at an early age because that's the main forefront of entrepreneurship, right? How adaptable are you to risk and how brazen are you to take those opportunities despite the things that you don't know, right? Now, I want to understand, how did you guys get into tech, right? Especially you, because I look at your LinkedIn, right? You started with Simf, again, working with your brother since birth. Shout out to you, Albert. How did you get into tech? Because I've known him as, again, this dude who runs the biggest dev shop in Cebu. When you talk dev shop, like, holy shit, that's Simf. Not even close. Nobody's even close, right? And he's built lots of products there. But if you started out your professional career, or is this a start? Or did you do anything prior to that?
So prior to really doing that, I don't know if it was the first startup weekend in the Philippines or it was the first in
what
Cebu.
Year?
But I think it was 2011 or...
That's the first. Because 2012 was the second one.
Dado Banata went, Winston D'Amarillo, like a bunch of like big shots actually went there. And that was my first exposure to tech. We actually won the startup weekend. Our startup was called Wait No More. We pitched it and we won. And that was like my highlight of like, oh, I think there's potential in tech. So after that, really, I just really worked with Albert, like Dave. I'm very close with Dave as well.
Dave Overton, shout out Dave. Yeah,
so I'm very close with Dave, and I really was just like, hey, I'll do whatever, I'll make coffee for you. I just really want to learn tech and all of that. And so I came in there really, like, literally making coffee for Dave, and I got promoted to like digital marketing, you know, copy pasting stuff and posting it in Hootsuite and all of that. And eventually, they gave me a shot into managing a project, like a project that they were willing to lose, you know, that kind of mentality where, oh, okay, this project, we could give this to George. We're okay to lose this client. But eventually it turned out to be a really successful project. And then they gave me more, And eventually I was managing like majority of the big accounts in Simf. And 3 years prior to leaving, I was leading their entire business development. Wow. So the growth there was really quick and fast because the founders also had a very different mentality in terms of running a company. It really was like trial by fire, and you could burn.
Right.
But if you really just don't be too stupid, you're not going to
be
burn.
An idiot.
So, So, eventually that's what happened there. And then I then started a media company and a tech company, and we're very like we always see it as a rising tide raises all boats, and we always keep in touch. And the ocean is so big. We have different niches, like Abstract has niched its way into working with like heavily venture backed startups, and Simf is working with really like large scale brands and systems.
Got it. All right. Let me just track back a little bit here on Simf. Because again, if you're coming in and your main task was doing coffee, And this is, again, common in a lot of tech startups. Everybody matters. There's no such thing as just a coffee maker in there, because eventually you're going to have to find your way with certain big responsibilities from the get-go and whatnot. And that's what I always say in this podcast, that if you're a student, if you want to really learn, the best place to learn, again, I'm heavily biased though, is going to be in a startup, because the learning curve is short compared to a corporate, where there are ladders and whatnot. Here, you get thrown into the fire. Yes, you're going to die a lot of times, but you're going to learn. But I want to understand, George, what your mindset was like in terms of acquiring skills. And because from literally making coffee to leading their BD in a short span, you have to learn and unlearn things that fast. What helped you learn things that fast and also develop your leadership skills? Because that goes parallel. You can't be given responsibilities if you're a sucky-ass leader, right? Exactly. So how did you develop that?
And yeah, when you're leading projects as well, especially like obviously in a tech company, you're dealing with designers, you're dealing with developers, you're dealing with clients. So there's a lot of like different psychologies that you need to balance. So that's really key. Adaptability is very key as well. I think it's really lowering your ego when you lead. A lot of times, like for example, I always remember this way back. Like I wrote this really shitty email to a client, and Dave was CC'd in that email. And then Dave just like basically PM'd me and told me, "Hey George, you have a brain, use your brain." And that really stuck with me forever, because I really like, I could have taken that and said like, "Hey, my ego is so high, I'm really so hurt, and then I will resign and do like all those stupid stuff." But I decided to actually take that as a challenge and say like, "Hey, yeah, I wrote a really shitty email. I'll never do that again." So since then, I actually am quite known to write very well-written emails. So yeah, it's lowering your ego.
Yeah, but lowering your ego is the first step. How did you become better? Because, okay, if you lower your ego, then you're open to criticism and improvement. And sometimes you can't come in and say, "Hey, I'm already this hotshot superstar if you're a fucking 18-year-old. Come on now," right? You need to leave your ego at the door so that you'd be open to improve. But what did you do to improve those things? Because again, lowering your ego. But I see also a lot of youngins struggle, but okay, where do I go? What do I do? And the ones that really thrive and really go up the ranks are the ones that are able to figure it out with minimal supervision. I think that's what you did. But what did you do?
I think you really just have to show up every single day. Like, I think showing up has a lot to do with it, because, you know, you could just like keep in like drowning your head with like, "Hey, I'm so good" and all of that. But showing up means you're being seen, and then you're going to be given opportunities to actually grow. So I was always there. I was always showing up. I was always taking on big challenges. Like way back, I remember we had this big client in the US, and it's opposite like time zone, obviously. So I really was just like, "Hey, I'm going to set up the team, the night team." And I actually like formed the night team, and I was basically midnight shift for like 60 days. Wow. And it was sad. And that account was successful for a certain time. And, and yeah, it's like just those kinds of challenges, you know, it's like head on.
Okay. Now, before we jump into, you know, your next stint as your own founder and executive producer, and is it 1216 or 1216?
It's 1216 Media. Okay, it's basically 1216 just media. My condo unit number.
There you go. So if you guys want to just look for the right condo in, I don't know, in IT Park somewhere or Lahug, right? Figure it out, right? 1216, that's his George's unit. But I want to find out first. So you developed that 6 years in SIM. When you came in, you knew nothing. But when you left, you leave a startup and you come out with a shitload of skills now. What was your go-to move and what were you good at after SIM? Right? Because you can't take that next leap if you're not confident in what you're able to do.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I think there's really like genuine confidence and fake confidence. And you're the only one who knows that. Like if you have the genuine kind of confidence, a lot of people can't really tell if you have either. So when I took that leap, it's really, I knew deep inside that I had that genuine confidence, because, you know, I never underestimate the power of experience. And I really had a ton of experience when I was there. So leading business development had a lot of advantages for me as well. It's like, I just got introduced to these like business owners directly. So when I started my new venture, it's like I'm not starting from scratch. And who is this
guy? Correct. Yeah. And again, because you already have the playbook of what not to do, what to do, and where your strengths are and how to maximize and how to now build a team. Now, here's what I want to ask. Because in 1216 Media, it's totally left field of doing dev work. There are similarities in a way. That's what I'm doing now. Dev and podcasts are very similar things in what we do. But it's very different when you are the head honcho, when your ass is on the line now. How was that transition? Because a lot of the people that would want to go into Buco Ventures, I would imagine, are probably taking their first leap, and that scares the living fuck out of them, right?
Exactly.
But how did you do that yourself to now get over that leap and like, okay, I'm confident, but dude, this is going to be my shit now. I'm scared. What did you do?
I'll tell the story of 1216 to you first and how that came about, because it actually came about like as an accident. Because when I was in tech, you know, us in tech, we just sit all the time and we're like coding and all of that. You get really chubby. So I gained like 28 kilos.
Ouch. Don't hurt me.
I didn't say fat. I said chubby.
That's what we tell ourselves, George. We just tell ourselves chubby. We don't go to the fat route. We just tell, yeah, I'm just chubby and I'm at over 200.
So what basically happened to me was I got very chubby, like 28 kilograms, like overweight. And that's not pounds, that's kilograms. So I really was just like, I wanted to make a very big change in my life then. I was like, I'm going to lose all of these fat and I'm going to keep running. At my peak, I was running like 14 kilometers.
You went Forrest Gump on yourself.
I did. I did. So I ran like 14 kilometers every single day for straight 6 months and then ended it with like a run in Banawe Rice Terraces full marathon. And I documented that entire process, you know, like with Instagram stories and all of that. And I was drinking Pocari Sweat all the time. Shout out. I don't know if I could say a brand, but I was drinking this.
You can. We'll just charge them. Don't worry. We'll send them the invoice.
I was drinking this hydration drink.
Because no worries. I'm really also a Pocari Sweat drinker. Shout out to them.
Right. And it's like, it helped me with my, like, not to be dehydrated. So I was thinking, you know what? I think I should pitch like a very good commercial to these guys because it's very relevant. It's very real. It's very true. I lost 28 kilograms from running and I wasn't dehydrated. So I compiled everything, turned it into like a 1 minute commercial type. And then I found like somebody to intro me to their team.
Wow.
And eventually I sent them like a really weird email where I showed my like really chubby picture and then what I look now and then the idea that I had in mind. And I said, if there's a possibility they could feature this together with like Nadine Lustre as their endorser, like in their Facebook page and all of that. And the crazy thing happened that they were like, yeah, let's do it. So I ended up doing a commercial for them and yeah, they paid me for it. And that's how 1216 got started. So we then grew the team and I started selling commercials since then.
Nice. That's amazing. But now two things. You built a team and you're good at BD and you're good at running now, you know, drinking Pocari Sweat also. How did you build a team? Because the second thing I wanted to find out is around this time, if you did 1216 in March, you also did Abstract Digital, which what you're doing now in May. That was 2 months apart. How did you make all of that work? And, you know, how did you build the same team or a separate team? How did that happen?
It's a very, very separate team. So 1216 is really like high production commercials at very like affordable cost. And that's what we did. And full disclosure, it's a very tough market, like doing commercials because
creative market's always tough.
Yeah, the barrier to entry and to distribute your content is already very cheap. It's no longer like you could only distribute on TV. So in our entire existence, we were able to sell like quite a bit of commercials, considering that it's actually a very tough market. Right. But at the same time, my passion has always been in tech. So I was always in tech still. That was always a separate team. And, you know, when you build like a very strong team and very independent, you don't really have to be like extremely hands-on micromanaging every single thing. And that's what happened there. So the offices actually back then was like, in the same building. So I would just go up and down, 18th floor, 16th floor.
Got it. All right. Now let's talk about Abstract before we take our first break. I want to find out how that happened within this 2 month span? Because I'm pretty sure you were still running when this was happening, right? How did you then think of creating a behemoth or a machine to build MVPs? Because that's where a lot of startups also fail. They bungle the MVP part. How did this opportunity come about?
So it's like when we take our experience in really just building for big government projects, like building for big local brick and mortar here, like dealing with the bureaucracy there and dealing with startups as well who have like really tight runways. We took all of that experience that we had back in SIMP. And when I built this with my co-founder, we came from that knowledge, you know?
Right.
It's like, how can we actually improve this agency model of building tech products? Mm-hmm. And as we were like doing more projects and all of that, it was a mix of like projects for big local brick and mortar here. We actually saw some rise in demand as well from like startups within Southeast Asia. So some in Singapore, some in Indonesia. And they turn out to be like really backed by serious like venture firms as well. And from there, it's like, it just really had a network effect. So we suddenly found ourselves by accident working with like really heavily backed startups.
All right. All right. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, I want to find out more about how you grew Abstract Digital. And then we're going to talk about how you scale that further and how you planted the seed that eventually turned into a full-on Bibuko plant that is now a venture. All right, well, let's talk about that more after the break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back from the break. We're still with George Paddy again, who's now told us how he got chubby. That hurt me, by the way. I had to run a few miles before I came back.
I'm motivating you.
Now I'm biking.
You should watch my video.
Okay. If Pocari Sweat pays, then yes, I will. There you go. It's good, by the way. I also drink that as my recovery drink. Oh, perfect with the banana. The perfect combo. Right.
And when it's really cold, right? When it's really
cold. Yes. Okay, Pocari Sweat. Yeah. This is now 5 shout-outs that I've done in this episode. So, bro, tell me the guy who I need to send it to. So, I will do that for them. Okay. Now, let's talk about Abstract Digital, right? MVPs, you know, the whole dev spectrum is a very competitive landscape. Because, again, 90% of developers, over 90% of developers in the Philippines don't create product. They do dev shop. They do service business. But you technically are creating product in the dev shop model, right? Now, I want to understand, when you saw the opportunity to build MVPs, first of all, why MVPs? And number two, how did you even know that the MVP is worth doing? Because at the end of the day, you have overhead to also worry about. The worst thing that can happen is a startup would go in there and say, hey, I need an MVP, but I don't have anything. How did you identify those venture-backed startups that had money to burn that you can do MVPs for?
For sure, definitely. So I think I'll tell you like our experiences in different types of like clients, right?
Sure.
So when you work with big corporate, it's like the money there flows very slowly. It's like it's as if they're sending it via your check. So the payment there is probably going to be 60 days, 90 days.
That's actually fast. My experience I've had, like, dude, 1 year account receivable, goddamn, you're already dead.
And there's so, I'm not like bad-mouthing that space because there's also some right fit for that space, you know, large scale. But you're also competing against the procurement department who wants to really slice your margins. You're also dealing with a lot of people. Yeah, exactly. You also have to maybe slightly play a little bit of politics. You have to have a lot of approval process, which basically means a lot of recurring expenses for me for a very long period of time with a very, very delayed collectible, which means a very bad cash flow. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's a really bad business model for us. Like I have a team of like more than 20 people, and as you know, talent is quite pricey. So the recurring expenses is quite high. But compare that to working with venture-backed startups. These guys move fast, they pay fast. And at the same time, you're working with extremely talented, smart, sharp founders. So when we've actually seen demand there, we've actually just doubled down in that space. So our technologies, the way we build, is really like out in the market in like 4 months. So we do a design sprint. Pre-pandemic, we used to fly a lot. We used to be in Singapore, in Jakarta to do design sprints. So we nailed the entire MVP design in like 2 to 3 weeks. And then we build on React Native in like 3 months. And then it's out in market and then we iterate. So yeah, that's why we quickly gained demand and traction from Rocket Internet back startups, which basically just have like a pre-seed of like a year of runway. And then they need to get the seed. Yeah. So I hope that gives you a good overview of why we really niched our way into this space.
Mm-mm. Now that's really good. And again, for you to even find those pre-seeded ventures, not a lot of them exist out there. Most of them are bootstrapped and the runway is typically low, right? But these are ventures that have money to burn, number one, and are willing to outsource MVPs because majority of the time, the people that don't have cash per se, don't have cash to pay for MVPs. That's why, you know, they crawl through that 0-to-1 process because they're going to make do with what they have and what they can afford. But for you to find those, how did you find them? The Rocket Internet peeps? Well, because they're technically elusive. They're not just going out there, hey, I'm Rocket Internet. Because they're busy building. How did you find them?
They are. So I think one point I would just like to highlight as well is like the hardest startup founders to work with actually are the ones that are not venture backed because they're like bootstrapping. They're using their like family money and all of that. And it's very hard to part with their money. So it's very challenging to work with those kinds of founders. That's why we really made it a point to really niche our way into venture backed startups. So the thing actually, how it got started is it was really just an introduction with like now a big like fintech company in Singapore and Indonesia. They're called Spendmo. And from then, we actually got connected to another Rocket Internet back. And now recently, we've worked with like the former head of Rocket Internet Asia, building his own startup. So the network effects really just took off. And we really found ourselves working with the most interesting founders with very interesting backgrounds, like former COO of Foodpanda. So
That's amazing. And there's one thing. I came from a Rocket Internet company in my last job, technically, in Groupon. And back in 2010, 2011, they had a bad rap because they're known to, they move fast at blazing fast costs that they tend to run people over. But credit where credit is due. The people that came from Rocket knew how to fucking scale startups like fucking crazy. But if that was the type of culture we were working on, the expectations are high. What is common among these startup founders from Rocket that you don't see in a typical founder, and how what's their brain like? What's their process like?
Good question. I think they're extremely efficient in terms of cost, in terms of they're very data-driven. So it's like when you do build products for them, design products for them, you really have to A/B test it and all of that. It's not just going to be like, hey, it looks fancy, it looks good, like let's launch it. It's really about like studying the data and moving really, really fast. Because, you know, the business model is pretty obvious. It's really just copying existing players and executing better. Mm-hmm. Executing faster, forming like a better team.
Yes.
So yeah, what's very common among them as well is they're all very, very smart. They're also very good to work with. You really just have to be very competitive as well. There's no room for politics or bureaucracy and all of that.
And that's true. And you also have to leave your ego at the door, because they didn't come here to dick around, for sure. That's one thing I know. Because that's also the downside of having, say, a Filipino local mindset. You tend to bring your ego and your feelings to the door. They'll come at you straight, like, hey, this is shit, right? I need this.
Exactly.
And that's why the results are like that, because the efficiency, and again, there's no wasted time, there's no wasted movement or effort. Even the way they build a team, if you aren't fit, you're out the door right away, right? That's how they built that thing.
Exactly. And we're really very honest. And when you work with these guys, it's like they also become your friends. So they're very, very honest with you. And even during the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, all of these venture-backed startups that we work with just started calling me and saying like, hey, our investors told us to stretch our runway to like 18 months instead of 12 months because we don't know what the investment landscape would look like. So we then like really on the spot just negotiated like, okay, let's lower the rates by this much. Will this work? And that's the kind of relationships that you need to foster and build with these guys as well.
Got it. All right. Now I want to understand, is that how you met these superstar guys named Saul Moya, Andrew Cougar, and Carlos and Angel? Yeah, because these are the common denominator among these fellas, as they're all former Rocket peeps, former Lazada. And Lazada, for those people who don't know, before Alibaba came in, this was a perfect example of this is their biggest rocket ship that they built. And they built it freaking fast. They pivoted as well. They went from, you know, retail into a marketplace model. And these were the guys behind it running it. And how did you meet them at that point?
Exactly. So I've always been friends with this group. Every time I'm in Manila, I actually have coffee with them. So in the early days of Good Work as well, I built portions of Good Work's technology. So since then, we've always kept in touch. I also made like a commercial for Saul. I think to date, it's still the most beautiful commercial that Flower Store put out. It's very, very heartwarming. So yeah, with that team, it was really just a bunch of friends that I hung out with, and we decided to like do something together because it's a very ripe time. We also saw what 335 Fund is doing, Francis Plaza and team.
Yep,
and
we're shout out. We just actually had them a couple.
We're actually collaborating. We have a shared WhatsApp to just like discuss how we could really build like the ecosystem and invest like the earliest possible to talented founders.
Absolutely. Correct. And the talent is there again. We've come a long way from 2011, 2012, where literally you can go in a room and you know everybody. A lot of those guys are still around, at least those guys that really pushed through. Some of them are not back. I hope they do come back. I think they are the most qualified to have a successful startup now, though they failed in their first few, you know, tries. But dude, for sure. But the kids now are fucking amazing, man. It's like, it's scary and it's amazing what they can do, but they need the right tutelage. Now, that's what I want to find out. Why you're doing Buko Ventures? So you have your friends, you had a meeting of the minds, but why a venture fund? Because some people would go like, oh, I'll cherry pick and see and invest and whatnot. Why this?
The reason we really built this to be like a venture fund and we really want to be out there is we really want to support the ecosystem very seriously, because the way we're thinking about it is very, like, from a very obvious standpoint, where Indonesia, if we use it as a benchmark, is just like twice the Philippines population, but their tech startup ecosystem there probably is 100 times better. And you could look at Absolutely. The cup like half empty and say the Philippines is a very sad market, or you could look at it from the perspective that we see it, where the cup is very half full and the upside is massive. So yeah. we're looking at it from that perspective, and we really just want to come in at the earliest stages of a startup, like pre-launch, pre-seed. Mm-hmm. We see a founder who's really extremely well-versed with the industry that they're trying to disrupt or change, and we give them money to actually just get started, do it full-time. And with our guidance, we help them like create a very solid MVP to attract like a serious seed round using our network as well. So it's not just like leaving them there. It's really leveraging right. our value add in their startup.
And what I like about you is you don't shark them out. You're getting 5 to 10%.
Exactly.
Which for again, walk us through, if someone attracts you, what do they get specifically? Because I saw 5 to 10%, dude, that valuation is really good. Because most early stage founders here in the Philippines, ballpark figure that I'll typically see is they get 20 to 30%, which is dangerous if you got the wrong angel. You got the wrong angel and they get 20-30% of your shit, you're fucked. But at 5 to 10% pre-revenue, pre-launch, that's a big ass yeah. risk. But what do they get if they are fortunate enough to pass the standards that you guys look for?
Yeah, so I think the value add that we have really as like an angel backer to these startups is we could really help them through our network get like a serious seed round. And we won't like introduce them to our network as well if we haven't helped them yet like form the MVP that's solid with like data and like real good like projections or even like early traction and stuff like that. So I think that's where our real value add is. And when we let like a seed like round venture focused fund come in, these guys also know that our reputation in the industry is very credible as well. And we know what we're talking about. So yeah, since we launched Buko Ventures, we've been hearing pitches from really smart founders, and it's making us more excited about the ecosystem.
And if you're listening, you heard it here first on Hustle Share. Dude, I've just in this year alone, I've had like 4 or 5 new ventures that are now even venturing into idea space. Before, nobody wants to touch idea space bootstrap people. I guess idea space is the only one, but they don't help you build the MVP. They let you figure it out. But here, it's literally walking you through these things. Now, in terms of competencies, walk us through also the experience. So, of course, Saul and Andrew has been guests here before. So, if you, again, want to find out what their background was. In that network, within the 5 of you at least, what are the things they can get here? Because at the end of the day, just being in the room with these people and having the tutelage to build the product, rocket internet style, motherfucking shit, my goodness, right? is already a big boon. Because this is better than an MBA, because the people that is going to mentor you, per se, have done things at scale. What are they getting here?
Exactly. I think just to talk a little bit about the background of the team, the founding investors of Buko Ventures, it's like, if we look at Saul, for example, when they sold Lazada to Alibaba and he was CFO of Lazada, he then built Flower Store. And fast forward to present time, Flower Store Group is the biggest flowers gifting company in Southeast Asia, not just the Philippines. They have operations in Vietnam and the Philippines. So that kind of growth hacking and like social media marketing and like even now venturing into TikTok is just like really... really valuable. Like it's a massive value add. Like when we discuss things internally or when we mentor these people that we will fund and advise, we really come from that perspective. And same goes with Carlos and Angel from Lazada. It's really the value that they bring there is really just from the perspective of like a giant, you know, like how giants are thinking, yep. what the giants are trying to do next. So this kind of perspective really is very value add. And then from my end, it's like, I really focus on cost efficiency as well. Like I know how to build it really quick and I can advise them there. Mm-hmm. It's like, we wouldn't fund somebody and then tell them to hire an agency because I know that agency's margins are quite high, though it's like less risky yeah. compared to a freelancer. The margins are pretty high. So we could advise mm-hmm. them a lot on just shaping up the MVP at the most cost efficient way.
Got it. Now, last two questions before we take our last break. You told us what they're going to get in terms of network, but what are you looking for in terms of founders? Because at the end of the day, that's what's going to drive this. You guys are there to provide the resources, the experience, the mentorship. But you got to have a top-notch motherfucking founder to even crack it. But what do you look for? Is there specific niches that you look for, or is it character traits? What is it like?
So in terms of category of like industry focus, we have no industry focus. Like you could be in any industry and you could pitch to us. So what we really look for is just a founder who really understands the space that they're trying to change and improve. And we see the passion as well. You know, with this early, like very early stage, there's no projections and all of that that we're looking at. It's really the passion and the knowledge in that space that they're trying to enter. So that's mainly the thing that we're looking for.
Okay. Now, if they're fortunate, what's the process that they have to go through in order to apply? Is there like a screening process? Do they have to dance? Do they have to pitch something? what do they need to get their attention?
We're very straightforward because we understand like how founders think and what really is stressful, you know, like going through the entire process. So we're very simple in a sense that you will actually just get, you pitch in the website, and then we actually schedule a call with you, and Carlos is going to be there. Andrew's going to be there. Like the team's going to be there, and you're going to be pitching. And then we're going to be asking some questions. Mm-hmm. And then when we agree on something, we send like a one pager term sheet, and you have the money in your bank. That's really the way we operate. It's like fast and simple and straightforward.
All right. Last question. What's the money like, and how do you determine that valuation? Because again, this is very risky. You take so much risk here, right? right from the get-go. But what is the monetary support? And again, what will they get after you get that term sheet signed?
Sure. The way we're thinking about it is from a very like simple perspective of, okay, a founder wants to pursue entrepreneurship full-time, and we're going to help them shape that up into an actual business. So we're going to give them like $500,000 in exchange for like 5 to 10% of their company. And then we're going to help them shape up their MVP that would allow them to like raise like a very serious round of seed to actually scale the business. So Correct. That's just it. That's
which are now available in the Philippines, exactly. Right? Angels and seed. Because before, dude, in how we did it before 2011, 2012, you don't have much choices because you have to go bootstrap until you get certain product market fit. And in order for you to get product market fit, there needs to be certain levels of iterations you need to get there. And if you're bootstrapped, good luck. You don't have runway. You're pretty much fucked. But now with the emergence of the 335s and whatnot and so many other funds, again, just track back in Hustle Shelter. I pretty much have them all here. You now have choices. You can choose the path. Like in Pokemon, pick your fucking Pokemon. Is it a Charmander, Squirtle, or a Pikachu, or a Bulbasaur? Right? Up to you what you want to choose, and it still goes into something very promising. I'm very excited for the ecosystem, but let's take our last break. And when we come back, I want to ask you how to build the proper MVP and everything else that you guys are doing in terms of what you're really good at, George. But I'll talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey, hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn and flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey, hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2020. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back from the break. We are still over the coconut in the Buko Ventures with George Padin, who again told us what Buko stands for. I'm very, very excited. There's now so many options. All we need are great founders. And if you are listening to Hustle Share, most likely you are a great founder because you're here to learn from our mistakes, the idiots that came before you. Because the reason why we're paying it forward, because we fucked up so much and we've seen so many people fuck up like us, so that you don't have to go through the same mistakes. That's what your Gen Y and Gen X's are for. Basically, your running playbook of what not to do. Okay, now George, I want to find out several things, right? Especially in the most important segment of any startup, the 0 to 1 ideation. Yeah. So fucking creation and of product and validations. This is where people bungle this so much. And again, you fucked this up so much and you got luck and you scaled prematurely. That is the death knell for your startups. And exactly. I want to find out, you've been building the MVP guy, the most valuable product guy. You know, that's what you are. And you've been building MVPs for rocket internet startups, for venture-builded startups, and also you build product. What makes a good MVP? Because I think MVP is a loosely used word that just for the sake of shipping something, it's already MVP. In your opinion, what makes a good MVP?
I think that's a very good question, because like getting to 0 to 1, like having a product is like the one and you actually have end users, that's the one. Building like an MVP, like for those who don't know, like MVP is like minimum viable product. It's really like basically the features that are like bare minimum that really just to get like your product working to validate whether people are going to use it or not. So when we build like MVPs for these like rocket internet back startups, it's really one of the most critical part is like moving really fast, as data-driven as possible, and then actually having end users use it and then iterate quickly. That's an MVP. And that's our strategy to MVP. Otherwise, you could build like a full-blown product and having all of these like patting yourself in the back, telling yourself yeah. that, hey, when I launch this, people are going to use it because it's beautiful. And then you launch it, you've spent a year building it, and then nobody's using it. And then you're going to be very frustrated in life. So that's not the way we do things. We ship something in 3 to 4 months. We iterate very quickly. That's the strategy in building like an MVP. Time is very essential, and right. make it as data driven as possible.
Again, rocket speed.
Yep.
No pun intended. You know, it's rocket speed, because at the end of the day, what you don't want to do is fall in love with the solution and your idea, and you build something, you know, fucking gargantuan and do waterfall development, build so many features, build so many things that nobody knows how to fucking use. So in your opinion, so you build an MVP, what's the method? Because at the end of the day, you're going to have to iterate. No MVP survives this, you know, becomes the final version of the product. It's basically just the exoskeleton or the blueprint of how you want it. There's going to be multiple pivots all the time that you need to do. But while you're doing that, what is the process that you typically use to make sure that you're building the right feature set?
For sure. So I would just like talk about like a recent like MVP that we built. Okay. So basically, there's this like rocket internet backed company. They're called Flash Coffee. They're headquartered in Jakarta. And they actually got like a recent funding of Series A of like 15 million US. What? And when we were building their MVP, we went to Jakarta. Their entire team was there, COO, CEO, head of operations, head of shops, and all of that. And that's very critical when you're like building the MVP together with like the team who will design your product, because it aligns the entire team. So that's what we did. And we do this thing called design sprint, where we just follow an entire design process to really just prioritize everything. So while we're doing that, we're actually aligning their team, the startup's team, of what the priorities of the company would be in terms of their MVP product. So we did that. We did a design sprint in like 3 days. We did mock-ups, like high fidelity mock-ups, and then we had it on phones. And then we went to their actual shops. And then we had actual end user customers actually click through everything. And then we recorded everything to see if they're actually, like, they understand how it's going to be used.
Wow.
And then around that, we then iterate quickly and then do high fidelity mockups, the actual designs. And then once we have that, we have all of the screens, we then push it on the development front, where we just like code it as quick as possible. Yeah. And then we launch.
So you don't code until you've seen high fidelity mockups, like what I said, where you expose it right away to the user, measure it, how they interact with the product, and then you just double down on what works. In the case that it doesn't work, what do you guys do?
In the case that it doesn't work, when we do like the mock-up testing, we really just quickly iterate the design. So what gets to development is like the most de-risk product design already.
Got it.
And then we then launch it into the market, and then we start iterating from there. We start building on like more visions that they have, further tech, more features and stuff like that. So eventually they become a very like full-blown product, you know, with so many features. But that's always the route that you should go when you're building tech startups. It's never like, hey, we will be this full-blown. You're going to live a very, very miserable, like sad life if you keep
and
building
expensive
full-blown
life
products.
As well. You know,
yeah,
that's what people typically do. Like, oh, let's go ship it, let's hire a dev shop. And most dev shops don't freaking make it on time. And it's worse if you do it in house. Some people do it in house, building an MVP in house, and you don't have a product yet. And again, tech talent is expensive. Good luck to your runway that you already dug yourself a hole 6 feet deep, you know, at the end of the day. Again, when you build an MVP, you're always in search of not product market fit yet, but problem solution fit. So you iterate, something works. But how do you know, George, if you already have problem solution fit, that you can now iterate in scale a little bit and build more processes on top of that?
So when we build products, it's really usually for example, like this Rocket Internet back startup, they got the pre-seed from Rocket Internet. there's probably like 12 months, 18 months runway to really just like build it. They come to us with the idea of what they want to build and what they need to build. And, you know, it's like in 6 months, that's probably the tech that we build is what they're going to use to raise further funding for their seed round, right? So that's very important for them as well. So they're the experts in the industry. We're just like the consultants who comes in and diagnoses the problem and then comes up with a solution based on like what we see. So the design sprint is very valuable in a sense that it actually lets us discover so many things. Even them as founders who are experts in their space already discover new things when we do the design sprint. So yeah, I think going through a real design process is very important and critical, not just like exactly copying the screens of the competition that you're trying to beat, because you will find yourself in situations where there are a lot of business use cases that doesn't freaking make sense for you.
Correct.
Because you just copied every single screen that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, you might even copy the logo. So don't copy anything, huh? Just make sure you
iterate. Inspiration. It's a good inspiration.
Correct. And again, it's good because you're there to outscale them as well. Now, I want to find out. So you have all of that and what you built, you have problem solution fit. In your opinion, and this is also circles back to what Buko does. Build an MVP, problem solution fit. When is the perfect time to properly raise funds for a proper seed? Because I always get this like, oh, we're building a product. We're not yet launched, but I want to launch, or I want to raise now. Like, I'm not sure if that's a good idea because you need to have traction, my man, before you you freaking do it. But when's the right time to do that?
So that's really where we're coming in as Buko Ventures to really just fill that gap where a lot of like existing venture firms are in right now, which is mostly in seed round. We come in at the riskiest space, which is earliest, like where there's a founder who can't afford to do it full time, can't afford to bootstrap, but extremely talented. We give them money to actually survive and not think about anything else, like paying their electricity bill, but only think about building their product and be obsessed about it. That's where we come in. And I think because of our mentorship and the value add that we bring, we really help them shape up a very solid like MVP that allows them through our network as well to just connect with these like serious seed backers.
Correct. So 335, the Foxmonts, whatnot.
You can't raise serious seed round unless you actually have like data, like what you said and all of that. And we help them reach that. So our hope at Buko is really to just empower like the next wave, because we basically sponsored their leap into entrepreneurship. That's the way we see it.
Absolutely. Man, I wish this was around when we were doing, but again, it wouldn't have happened if that happened. But last question, if you have advice for Philippine startup founders, again, at the precipice of jumping into entrepreneurship, they think they've accumulated enough experience and there's real confidence, not just bravado that they have. What's your advice for them to take that leap?
I think when you pursue startups and ideas, it has to be coming from the point of view of real passion. It's like you don't come into it from the perspective of, I just want to raise more and more money and have like really high valuations. And also, investors get a very good read whether you're actually passionate about what you're doing and what you're pitching us. And we see that. We get a sense of, is this coming from a perspective of just purely ego, or is this really coming from a perspective of these guys are actually extremely like passionate about what they're doing. They understand it and they're a visionary. So it's a massive like plus. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're in that space, it's like, be obsessed with something, like something genuinely you're obsessed about. And I think that's the right time to actually take the leap. Otherwise, if you're just like reading all of these like tech and Asia articles and then you copy those guys, you're like raising a baby that you don't love, you know, if that's a right analogy.
And again, George, thank you very much for sharing that amazing, amazing advice. But again, if they want to join and climb up the tree where the coconut nut is up there, what do they do to become and or have a chance to even work with you guys in Buko Ventures?
Yo, we thank you for that, Ron. We are very, like, our website is very straightforward in terms of, like, you don't even have to send a pitch deck. You just send, like, as a description and all of that. So you could go to bukoventures.com to just apply there. I think
you'll be the show notes.
Yep. bukoventures.com. And yeah, eventually we will set up like our Facebook as well and Instagram to make it like cooler and all of that.
And you'll see a Pocari Sweat commercial there. Oh, huh?
Exactly.
Sponsored by Pocari Sweat. Alrighty, man. Thank you very much. Before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you listen to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and whatnot. And if you did say some jargon, don't worry. It's going to be in the show notes on hustleshare.com. And if you want to be part of the community, it's going to be in the Hustle Share community on Facebook, so you can also join us and talk about, you know, what happened on the show and meet your fellow listeners of the podcast. And lastly, message us on the Hustle Share chatbot at m.me/hustleshare powered by chatbot BH. Again, George, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.